Welcome to this episode of Wildcast. I'm your host, Matt Blymeyer. Our guest today is a former head men's soccer coach at Lycoming College, was also the athletic director at Lycoming College before coming to Penn College in the same position. He took a few years off from Penn College, going to Madonna as their director of athletics, and made his way back to Williamsport about 2 years ago. Our guest today is a Baltimore native by way of Perry Hall, the director of athletics, Scott Kennel. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Your journey into athletics. You had a very successful collegiate career at North Carolina Wesleyan. You did professional soccer for a little bit. You started out as an assistant coach at Gettysburg before getting your head coaching, your first head coaching position at Lycoming College. How was your college experience? When did you know during college that you wanted to pursue being a head soccer coach?
Yeah, I think when I was at Wesleyan, I really loved the sport of soccer, have my entire life. And I was very close with my head college coach who, probably by my sophomore year, was starting to ask me about what my thoughts were about being a college coach down the road with everything we always spoke about in the office and on the road, thought maybe that'd be a good fit for me. So Chris Apple, former head coach at Wesleyan, kind of pushed me in that direction to become that head coach. And, you know, at first I wanted to be a teacher, and that was the route I was going to go. But I think speaking with coach, it kind of started to push me in that direction. I really started to think this is something I really want to get into. And not just because I love the game, but also I really love the atmosphere of being with students and working with individuals. So I thought it was a good fit at the time.
And so a few years into this journey, the head coaching position at Lyco opens. You apply for it. You get the call from, I'm assuming, Coach Girardi?
Correct.
When we've asked all the coaches this, what is that moment like when you get the phone call from the AD at the school in which you applied for a job offering you at the time as probably your dream job, at least to be a head coach? What's that moment like?
It was surreal. You know, you're not thinking at that time. It's kind of young in my age at that point, not sure it was going to come that early. It's one of those things where you sit by the phone and you wait and you're excited. And every time the phone rings, you're hoping it's the school calling. But when Coach Girardi gave me that call, I mean, he didn't even have to ask me. I knew at that point I wanted to be at Lyco. I wanted to be the head coach there. And probably one of my greatest days of my career, getting that first phone call for your first job.
Yeah. So a few years at Lyco, eventually you coach both the men and women, and then you move into an administrative position initially as the assistant director of athletics. At what time during this career, this journey for you, did you move into the administrative role, and when did you know that that was kind of the new path you wanted to take in collegiate athletics?
Yeah, it had to be about 2 years in at working at Lyco, and I start to realize that I love coaching, but I really am intrigued by everything from the administrative side. I had a very strong relationship with Coach Girardi and always speaking to him in his office, always having one-on-ones. And about 2 years in, I, at that point, asked, I think I might want to go his direction. And it's funny, I remember him in the conversation sitting in his office saying, it's funny you say that. He's like, I was actually going to have a conversation with you about possibly moving that direction. Obviously, everything that you're doing here is geared towards administration. You volunteer to do stuff, and that's what I was doing. Like, I was running the SAC program. I was helping out hosting championships, things of that nature for when it came to conference and NCAA. And I think over time, he kind of just gave me the rein to do things little by little until it blossomed to something bigger at that point. I think about around my 6th year at Lyco's when I became the assistant director of athletics and really started to take more of a leadership role, doing a lot of things in the office and learning from, in my opinion, one of the best mentors out there.
Yeah, that's a good segue into the next question. You know, we've talked for years. It seems the impact that Coach Girardi had on you was immense, and it continues to this day. You guys have still had a relationship in which you communicate and talk to each other. What specifically, and maybe it's a bunch of things, what did you learn from Coach Girardi, not only as an athletic director, but one of the most successful football coaches in Division III history?
Yeah, it all started when I was coaching. He started at a young age as well. And I think, especially in my very beginning stages of my career, it was win. I had to figure out a way now. Can't take days off, that stuff. And I would sit there and have conversations with him. And he said, listen, I was the same way at your age, But eventually you're going to realize that you can take a day off when it rains. Not everything is about winning. And I thought that was a good start of our relationship at that point. But I think what we connected on was our bond that we had, that we didn't just speak about what was going on at work. We had conversations about anything that's going on in the world, anything in our lives. And I think that's where our bond really began to grow. And we both had an immense trust for one another. And every day, like you said, I speak about Coach Girardi. It's probably weekly in this office. I think when I say he is one of my biggest mentors in my life when it comes to my profession. I mean, he's the one that kind of kickstarted me to go in this direction. And to me, I owe a lot to him for steering me in the right direction. I mean, even after I left Lycoming, we were still having conversations. I would still pick his brains about, you know, his brain about certain things, and we would do that. And, you know, it's fun when we do see each other once and again, you know, in town or just say hello. We just fall right back into those conversations, and that's something I'll always cherish that I have with Coach.
And so Coach Girardi announces his retirement. You end up being his successor. Any hesitation initially of accepting the job?
No, none. I think that we had such a strong bond. This is something that we spoke about for a good year before it even happened at this point. So it was already in his mind, here's what I want you to do because I want you to be the next person, you know, to oversee the department. So no hesitation. And, you know, obviously it is tough when you do follow someone like Coach Girardi, because I think, like you already alluded to, he was one of the best coaches in football, had strong relationships with everyone in the office, from, you know, our student athletes to our coaches in the office as well, and our staff. But I think he helped set me up for success while I was at Lyco. You know, I think he just did a great job with everything he did.
So being an AD brings its own challenges. Now you're a first-time athletic director, but you're still the head men's soccer coach. How did you juggle both of those?
Yeah, it was tough. I think coaching is a whole new beast in its own, from coaching on the field to recruitment, being on the road, and then trying to figure out, well, wrestling has a match today, basketball tomorrow. I have to be at all those. And that was the one thing, you know, as an administrator, I felt I had to be at everything. I can still remember when I was on the road going to Virginia to recruit for men's soccer, and I ended up skipping the first round of the men's NCAA tournament. And something I didn't want to do, but I know my recruiting, I couldn't stop, because if I stop doing that, I'm letting down 30 plus student athletes. So I had to continue on that track and go recruiting. Our men's basketball team went on to win, and I ended up finishing my recruiting after day one, because I felt that was a big monumental step for our basketball program. So that's where I think things started to come, I guess, in the full circle for me, realizing this is a job that is hard to do doing two full-time jobs. And that's when I made the decision, I can't do both any longer, because I didn't want our student athletes to suffer on the soccer side. But on the flip side, I didn't want our other student athletes on other teams or even our staff suffer in any way. So that's how I transitioned, you know, out of Lycoming at that point and made my way to Penn College and to get out of coaching altogether. Obviously, family's important to me, and, you know, just think, as our coaches say, they want to see their family, their children play. I was struggling just to get to my kids' games because I was doing two full-time jobs. You know, coming to Penn College allowed me to finally start to be at more events and more family functions as well.
And so the position, you did that at Lyco, I believe, for 5 or 6 years?
3 years.
Well, 3 years as both?
As the AD. I was assistant AD for 2 years, yep.
The position at Penn College opens up. You apply for one of the reasons is, like you had just mentioned, you wanted to, you know, just have one full-time job, which is understandable. I've always found it interesting that you're an athletic director at this well-established institution with well-established sports. And at the time, Penn College was not that athletically. Professionally, it was a little bit of a gamble of leaving an established program to a startup program that wasn't NCAA at the time. What were some of the things that you were juggling when making the decision to apply for this job? And I'm sure the things I just mentioned, you obviously were thinking about, that had to be a challenge to make that decision. Walk us through that process.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Matt, because when I first told people outside of Penn College that I was coming to Penn College, the remarks I received from people thinking, "What, you're at LICO, why would you go to Penn College?" And, you know, a lot of things intrigued me. I had a good relationship with the previous AD here, and we were always in conversations about them possibly trying to go NCAA and everything of that. And I know, even before I took the position, that was high on the list for the previous administration. And for me, one of the things I loved about coming to Penn College, it is a blank slate. And we weren't NCAA yet. There weren't too many things in place like we have in place now today. And I was intrigued by being able to come here and start doing things differently, but for the better, and make it more of a NCAA experience. And going back and forth and thinking about the decision, it was definitely tough because I loved Lycoming. I mean, it was a great opportunity, a great place. It was my first place I ever worked out of college full time. But I just felt that Penn College had so much to offer with not being established yet. And coming here and being the younger AD at the time, you think you can do everything and anything. So you thought, I'd come here and start to put my prints on everything. And, you know, it's been great to see. I believe it was 2011 I came here, just to see where we've come from 2011 to now, from when I left in 2016 and came back in 22. Just to think about not only what I started here and others that worked with me at that time, but even the stuff that continued once I left, and even adding even more to make this an elite program. Before coming here and working at LICO, I mean, you always heard, well, oh, it's Penn College. You know, now you don't hear that. It's Penn College in athletics is so established right now that we're just not the other college down the street anymore. In my opinion, not because I work here, we are the college right now. I mean, we are so far ahead than we were than 2011. And you can see the results we're having, the individuals we're attracting to come here as students, as staff members, as coaches. It's just unbelievable to see where we're at. And it's because of everyone that's come along, you know, in the past 15, 16 years.
So it's 2011, you come across town, you're coming to a department that at the time was funded probably literally a quarter of what we're funded now. You have no full-time coaches, I think total of 3 full-time staff members.
Including myself.
Including yourself. You're not even in your own building. Day one, are you like, okay, let's buckle down?
Yeah, day one was interesting because obviously coming from LICO, it's very established. Our office was shared with the admissions house. So literally you would walk out of my office door and you would see 3 counselors' offices across the hall from us. So it was myself, we had the assistant AD / sports information back then, and then just our administrative assistant. So it was definitely different. I just left a college that just built a brand new field house, everything. But, you know, that's what excited me to take this position and to be able to do what we have done over this past 16 years. I mean, I know, Matt, you haven't been here since I was here. But if you would have saw from 2011, I know you and I talk about this all the time, but it's like night and day now at this point. And it's only getting better. Every year we're adding new stuff. We're getting new things. So I think it's definitely what I expected when I came here. And I would say it probably has even gone further than I expected, I guess.
The institution makes a decision, we're going to go NCAA. There's some flirtation about what level to go, and obviously decided on Division III. Okay, now we're deciding on Division III, we're going NCAA. It's a 5-6 year process. How do you start building an NCAA Division III program from scratch?
Sure. So the first thing we did is we put a 5-year strategic plan together. And one of our most important things is recruiting. As I always say, for Division III, we're like the second admissions house on campus. So we need to get coaches in here that are going to start recruiting and that are on campus all the time. So we put a plan in to hire I think it was 6 full-time coaches in a 3-year period. So we did that. I believe it started in year 2. But we also had to find a conference home immediately. So when we applied, we had – it was called a provisional year where you just kind of go through the meetings of the NCAA. You're not a part of any NCAA conference yet at this point, but you're just learning about it, making sure this is the right step. After year 1, we felt we were in a good position to move forward. We did that. We officially sent in our large application that took many and many people across campus to complete. It was probably around 50 to 100 pages long. Every department had to fill things out. We went through that. We found a home in the conference called the Northeastern Athletic Conference, which is now the United East, which we're a part of. They took us as a member, and things just start to fall in place from there. And the thing to, you know, see where we were, after year 2, we were able to start competing in the NEAC, even though we couldn't win championships, or should say we could win championships, but we couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. The runner-up would always take the championship bid. But it gave us that opportunity, and we started getting coaches recruiting more and attracting more student-athletes. And within that 5-year period, we're pretty much where we're at today. And just to look back at that, probably one of the biggest things I think I've ever accomplished or been a part of with others on campus that have done something very special. Because it's funny, when we were pre-NCAA, you would tell people, oh, we're a part of this conference, and no one would understand what we were in college athletics. But the second you say you're an NCAA program, everyone knows what that mm-hmm. is. So that was a really neat process to see. I always say so many people on campus helped get us to where we're at now today.
Unless you experience it, I think it's hard to understand a lot of the below surface level things that it took to get through that provisional stage. It wasn't just hiring the full-time coaches and having people go out and recruit. It was as simple, as basic as having a student-athlete handbook, setting up a student-athlete advisory committee, adjusting and adapting budgets, policies and procedures, handbooks. How do you know, did you know what to pick first?
Obviously, when you first decide you're going to go to NCAA, you have your own strategic plan in place. But I think what is the best potion for anything is calling individuals that are in the NCAA, especially ones that have already gone through the process recently, and kind of use them as your tool to see if you're doing the right thing or if I should add something. So I used a lot of individuals throughout the beginning of the process to make sure we were on track and we're doing the right things. And you're right, there's things at times where like, never thought about that, or this is great. When you start to go NCAA, the NCAA lets you know who the previous schools were. And if you ever have questions, please, you can definitely contact them. And I think that's something that we used a lot in the beginning, just to make sure we're on track, as well as we did have a mentor for the entire process as well, who was great. She was always helping us with any questions we have, met biweekly, just to make sure that we're on track. And, you know, as you know, I mean, we did skip year 4 in the process because we were ahead of the game. So we actually made it into the NCAA a year earlier than normal. So I would say with all the help from people from the outside and everyone inside, we did a pretty good job.
You had left prior to the last year of getting it, but what was already established, we kind of just sailed through that final year and we were able to skip the final year and got full membership a year early. And that's not normal. That is unusual. Once we got that news, I think within 10 minutes of it, you were at Madonna in Michigan and you got a phone call. And what was that phone call like for you?
It was definitely surreal. And I know I've told this story to you, Matt, before. And, you know, we put so much time and effort into going to NCAA. And when I say we, it's not just everyone in athletics. If anyone ever goes through this, you're going to realize that higher up is going to be, you know, everyone in the different positions in admissions, your deans. I mean, there's so many things and so many people are going through this process. And that's how we were able to get there. But I remember I was sitting at my son's baseball game. It was a Friday. I got the phone call. And obviously, I see it's Matt calling me, so I know it's something important. And Matt and then the former athletic director, John, called me to let me know. And it was, I mean, it took me back because it's something that we put so much time into, and it was a very emotional phone call because we did it. You know, even though I wasn't there for the final year, we're always still a part of where we came from, and you want to see everything be successful. And to get that call, and if I'm tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe, Matt, I think you said I was the first person you guys called before you let anyone else know. And that meant a lot to me, because in the back of my head for that couple weeks, knowing that that's when the school is going to find out, like, I waiting for, you know, to hear, did we get in? Did they go forward? And to get that call, I remember I literally walked away from my son's baseball game because I was a little emotional over it, because it was a lot of work that we all did. And just to see everything that continued when I left, and you know, John, who was the AD, did a great job. You know, I left and continue with yourself. But I did. I had to get up and walk away. I remember my son after games asked me, why did you leave the game? I was like, I just had to take a call. Mm. But to me, that was, we're winning. You know, that we just did it. You know, and it's 5 years. It either may sound like a lot of time or it may not, but it is a lot of time with the time and effort that goes in, with the reports that happen by, I think, quarterly, whatever it was, and yearly, the end of the year reports that you had to do.
And they were big. You remember how big?
Oh, I know.
We would have to snail mail them and put in a thumb drive, because, I mean, it was a quarter inch thick, half inch thick stuff that we all, I mean, they wanted, they did their due diligence. They opened up the hood and they checked the engine, and they checked it twice, and they made sure that you were doing the things you said you were doing. And it was a big, like physically big report, but it was also a big report in the impact it had on moving us forward. Yeah, so I forget how the chain of command went as far as the news being disseminated. So I think at the time, Davey Gilmore was our president. I think she got the news initially and sent it to, at the time, our direct report, and John Vanderveer, who was our AD at the job at the time. And so John and I were in the office, and John immediately, when he got, he's like, we got to call Scott. And I said, yeah, we got to call Scott. And credit to John. I mean, John knew the work that you had put in to get us there, and that he was kind of that, in that first year for him, he was just carrying the torch until we got that. And it was number one for John to want to do that. It says a lot about him. But for me, too, having worked with both of you and being involved in some of, I think, about 2 years of that process, it was great hearing your reaction, and you being the first person outside of, you were probably the fifth total person to know about it. So it was neat. And then right after work, we all headed over to the local bar here, Kimball's, and we all celebrated as a department, because we had made our goal.
Yeah, well, it's funny too. I mean, you go back and you look at it, but I know I keep saying this, but just the little things that individuals did on campus to get us to become full members, I cannot say enough how much, you know, people from the outside that helped, people from the inside. We had coaches that were full time that you would ask them to do anything outside their position, and they're willing to do it. Like, the goal to become an NCAA member was so high on everyone's list. And it is a long, long process. And I've said that over and over, but it is, to me today, the most rewarding thing I've ever experienced in college athletics. More than winning a national championship, more than getting my first job. I mean, it's so much that went into it, and so much time and effort and so much work that so many people put into it to get there. And the terrible thing is, we're the ones that work in athletics, so we're the ones getting credit. Mm-hmm. But again, like, there's no one knowing everyone throughout the entire campus that's meeting monthly about going over reports. When Matt just described what the reports were like, and we had to put them on flash drives and everything else, that's just not athletic stuff. That's people giving enrollment information, admissions, our majors. Like, we had to have professors write stuff, and it's just so much. So when you look back at that, I look back at some of the things I've done in my career. I don't think I will ever match anything to give me such a big reward, a big return on. And, you know, do I want to do it again? Absolutely not. But it is something that, you know, I'll remember forever.
Yeah, and this is a small example of other departments having to tweak certain things to back up a Division III institution. So our financial aid had to change how they were doing certain things, how they were awarding aid, and our scholarships committee had to switch language in scholarships because they could no longer factor in athletic participation as a reason to get aid at the college level. And prior to that, Penn College could. And now they couldn't because it's against NCAA Division III rules. So that's a small example of how, you know, a practice for maybe 20 or 30 years had to get tweaked, rewritten, just to support where the institution wanted this department to go.
Yeah, you're right. And that's, again, just a small snippet what had to be done back then. That's a great example because that I totally forgot about that when we had to go through it in the very beginning. This was months long and trying to figure out how do we come up with a system that's going to fit what we have to do for the NCAA.
All right, we'll take a break with some of my questions. We have questions from the coaches. Eric had reached out to some coaches and asked them for questions. So here are the questions from our coaches. Are you ready?
Sure.
Are you sure?
I'll let you know.
What do you believe is the most important piece of advice for young or aspiring coaches to learn?
One important piece would be don't be afraid to fail. Failure is not a bad thing. It's a learning experience. And in any leadership role, whether that's something that we do administratively or in the coaching world or any other position that has leadership authority, failure is not a bad thing. And you have to learn things early for you to be able to tweak those for the future. So I always like to have that conversation with individuals about the failure piece because it's going to happen. If someone's going to have a conversation with you and they're going to tell you they've never failed, I don't believe them. But that's how you get stronger as a leader. So I think that's something that is good to learn from. And even at that point, if you don't know how to correct it, go ask for help. Help is the greatest thing to ask. If you're able to speak to people and have those conversations, let them give you some information as well. Let them tell you, hey, here's what I may do. And I think that's always something you should be able to do is, you know, don't be afraid to fail and also be able to ask for help.
Another question. Do you have any questions that you use to really get to know someone quickly?
I like to try to get away from the work atmosphere and try to make them feel comfortable and maybe talk about family, where they're from, just to see if there's any common ground that I can talk about. And I feel like that opens up the conversation a bit, and especially anything else that you can do that's, you know, outside of the work realm. I think that kind of makes it easier for that individual to have more trust with you.
Question from Brittany. If you were more brave, what would you do?
Position-wise, like a...
No, I just think in general, like if you know, there's, I think, a level of bravery, and I'm just interpreting this question off the bat. There's a level of bravery I think we all have. If we had 1 inch more, what would we be willing to do? Skydive, jump off a cliff?
Wow. Well, I can tell you my wife, Tierney, would love to go skydiving, and I'm not certain I would do that, but if she wants to, I'm going to do it. So as much as I don't want to, that's something I would do.
She has a little bit more of an explorer spirit than you.
I wouldn't say that. I think we're about equal, but
That's not what I just heard.
I'm not sure I want to jump out of a plane.
Mama T would, though.
She would.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, two more questions. These are written down in pen because I believe they're less serious, and reading them, yes, are a little bit less serious. Questions for Scott from Jordan.
Is Jordan the only one that gave questions today?
Seems like it. Jordan's very busy. Okay, this is going to be interesting. I'd love to know the answer to this. Who is your favorite pickleball teammate and why?
That's a tough one. There's so many to choose from.
I don't see it that way, but go ahead. I mean, it's your answer.
Well, I have three choices. It's either Coach Mensch, Coach Williams, or Matt Blymeyer. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they all have their strengths.
Ooh.
Yeah.
No weaknesses.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. I think because I like to get a good laugh every once in a while, I'd probably choose Matt Blymeyer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because of your laughter is at my humor, not at my expense.
I mean, when you go and you spike with that, you know, up at the net.
The Air Jordan?
Yeah, the Air Jordan. Like, yeah. It comes out, and I don't see anyone else doing that. So it's just...
And I get a good 2 inches of air.
And I feel like everything just, like, slows down. It's like slow motion with you up there. And that's probably just because you're jumping a half an inch off the ground. Yeah. But, I'd probably pick you, Matt.
It'd be hard to slide a piece of paper underneath my shoes when I jump.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. All right, last question is from Tyler. This is a question I'm sure you've heard before. Why did you not recruit Tyler to play at Lycoming? So for those not knowing, Tyler is, he's from Muncie. He was a very good high school player. He ended up going to Misericordia, led them to a couple of conference championships. He's in their Hall of Fame. He was in Scott's backyard when Scott was a head coach at LICO, and he didn't get a thing. And he is still very upset by that to this day, clearly with this question.
Yeah, I feel like this is a question I get weekly. Tyler likes to bring it up often. You know, Tyler was a very, very good high school player, and I would say it was probably an oversight on myself. I think the toughest thing, especially, you know, back in my coaching days too, I don't think a lot of locals like staying local. They wanted to kind of get out. And for me, you know, we talked about being from Baltimore. Baltimore was my recruiting hotbed. I'd say probably a third to two-thirds of my student-athletes were from Maryland. But I felt like when I recruited in the local area, I never got those kids. They always wanted to just get either far away or far enough where they can live on campus. I would say early on, I stopped recruiting locally. Every once in a while, I would if they reached out to me, but usually I did not at that point. If I could go back in time, I would definitely take Tyler.
It sounds to me, from what I'm hearing with that answer, is not recruiting Tyler Mensch is the biggest regret of your coaching career?
That's about right.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure I heard that correctly.
Yeah. You make sure Tyler hears this too.
I think he's going to play it on repeat. Okay. Our final question is, so we've talked about the growth of this department and from when you got here into 2011, I'll just do quick bullet points of what, where we've seen the department go. Obviously we are now up to 8 full-time coaches. We're in our own suite. We all have our own offices. We have a turf field. We have a players lounge. We have a student athlete only weight room. Our budgets have increased. We're able to give students more. We have a nutrition center. We're redoing the basketball courts. And that's all within the last 14 years. I'm sure I'm missing a bunch
of...
Baseball, softball complex coming next year. Turf field, finally. We've added a wrestling room. We added a intercollegiate sport and men's lacrosse.
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame was added early on, and it's a success and one of the favorite things I think we do every year. That is a lot in 13, 14 years. What's next for Penn College Athletics?
Yeah, so we're starting to really turn the corner when it comes to our sports teams right now. We're starting to get the facilities. We would like to see the facilities continue to grow a bit more. But I also think one of the biggest things for me, and I know I say this a lot at our meetings, is trying to bring our alumni back into the mix of everything is a big thing I see down the road. As we talk as staff and in our meetings, and we talk about, Matt just said how the Hall of Fame is one of our favorite things to do every year, which it is. We want to continue to bring our alumni back into the fold. And one of the things we're starting this fall is something called the Ring of Honor for each sport. They'll be inducting these individuals into their own Ring of Honor as well. So we can kind of give more honors to these individuals that played years and years ago that just haven't been back to the program or even haven't been back to campus, and we're hoping to involve them more. But I think that's one of the great things. Like when this came about, it was Coach Scheller that brought up the idea to me, who is actually an alumni men's soccer player from here. And it was a great idea. So it's something we're trying to do. So I always say we're trying to do these little things that make big impacts. And I think this is one of those things like that. And again, just sticking with trying to improve our facilities and continue to work on those right now. But again, like Matt said, if you would have saw us from 14 to now, it's come a long way. And the one thing that I know we haven't plugged and I'm going to plug here because I always like doing this is our student athletes don't just do well in competition and playing fields. They're doing great in the classroom. We average over a 3.0 GPA every semester for 300-plus student athletes. We just did 2,700 hours of community service, which I'm very proud of seeing our students do that, as well as we raised just under $20,000 to give to charities. So we're going to continue down that route, and hopefully, you know, we continue getting stronger and making Penn College proud.
Nice. Did you have questions for us?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. There was a notebook. We were nervous that there may have been questions. Eric's sweating a little bit. So if no questions, thank you so much for joining us. And that wraps up this episode of Wildcast.